the sermon. Come on. It was interesting. I dressed this morning, and if you noticed, maybe the last couple of weeks, I had a collared shirt on and everything. And then I saw Andy, and I realized why I'm dressing differently. And I thought, nah, this is who I am, okay? So I'm sorry, Andy. We've got a good collection of shirts that are very similar. I was talking with Mum this week, and you know, she's worried about this coronavirus and stuff, and she's got an autoimmune disease, which makes it even more concerning for her. And I said, well, you know, you're lucky you're not in Italy. And she's like, yeah, I know. And I said, well, you know why in Italy it's spread so much, right? Anyone know? Because we're hugging and kissing everybody, right? Italians. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fears around that, so we just need to be praying into it. I think praying into the fear more than the thing itself and why people are so afraid. When there is a hope and a future, some of these things tend to pass us by. And when we're more certain about who God is in our lives. I've had a very interesting week. I mean, there's lots been going on. And as a pastor, you don't end up defining years by the year date. You know, you don't say, oh, in 2010 we did this. You usually define what happened that year that ends up defining that year. And in church, there's always an issue or an event or something that impacts almost the whole year. And you get to the end of the next year thinking, hopefully we'll have a quiet year next year. And it never happens, right? And some of these events, like building projects, sometimes it's a big conflict issue or a church split or financial problems that are hit with, but they end up defining how you end up passing the year church. And this past week, we had three or four things happening that you kind of sat there at the end of the week thinking, these are defining events. These are events that are going to take up a good portion of our year working through them. And I was a bit miserable on Friday. I was grumpy, you know, church Christians. You know, and we'd gotten a call earlier in the week from friends that we hadn't seen in more than 15 years. They were part of our church plant in Sacramento. He is a Kiwi, and he was married to an American girl. And they were living there in Sacramento. They became part of our church plant. And all of a sudden, I get a call from him, and he's like, Rob, we're in Fielding. Why don't you come and visit us? And I'm thinking, it's 2.5 hours away, mate. And so I kind of left it to Monica, who does better at organizing these things than I do. And then I ended up decided meeting in Levin at this place called Cobb & Co. It's a New Zealand institution, I hear. the decor was interesting. Anyway, so we met in Levin, and you know, no one tells you that pretty much all of Wellington drives out of Wellington and up the same road on a Friday evening. When I thought it'd take us an hour and a half, you know, Apple Maps said 3.5 hours to Levin. I'm like, what? What's going on here? And it's just a big red line all the way up. We got there and it was great. We hadn't seen them in 15 years and it was, you know, sharing stories and everything. But I wasn't in a really good space because then we got back in the car and in Levin, everything shuts down at 8:30 apparently because Cobb & Co. were kicking us out by 8:45. You know? We're closing up here. I'm like, oh, it's Friday night. I'm sorry. So we got in the car and we're driving home and Monica and I wouldn't call it an argument. It was an emotional disagreement. Mon might see that differently, but yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, we got into this, and it all started philosophically, and it always starts philosophically, right? And then it becomes closer to home. But I realized that as we were driving over the Haywoods, and there is now silence in the car, and, you know, what sparked all that in me? And part of it was because the moment I get upset with church or with Christians, I take it out on all of Christianity. I just take it out on all of Christianity. A little problem that's happened here or a little problem that's happened there, all of Christianity is a problem now, and I'm questioning everything. What's the point of church? What's the point of doing all this? You know, it's all this stuff. When I first came into ministry, when I first heard God's calling, I'd already been working as a youth worker in church. You know, I've been volunteering my time and all of this. But I remember the calling I got was right in the midst of a senior pastor who had been this, who had put all his time and effort into planting this church and this lovely community. And he was at the end of his rope. And I remember him just sitting by his car, literally crying and just saying, I can't do this anymore. I'm sick of it. These people, they just hammer you time. And I remember just hearing God and being really excited in that moment, which didn't really work well for poor Rob, who was going through this. But I felt like that in the car as I was driving. And I realized, why am I angry at Christianity? Why am I angry at the church? Has anyone felt that way? When someone in church does something wrong, intentional or not, you get angry at everything. When the church slips, when they play the wrong song or preach the wrong sermon, then your anger turns to the whole institution, to the whole thing. You've ever experienced that? If you've had that feeling that you come to church because you like something about it, and you don't go to another church because you don't like something about it, for some of you, you might have had a period in your life where you turned away from church altogether because something irked you, something hurt you. Do you ever feel that way? Have you ever felt that way? Here's a question for you. Why are you here this morning? Why are you here? What's brought you here? Is it obligation? This is what I do? Is it because I've got the kids and I really want them to? Is it because the pastor's really cool? Yeah, that one, yeah. Actually, the youth pastor's cooler, but hey, we won't say that. You're trying to look like him, Rob. Why are you here? What brings you here? Look, I'm the pastor of this church, and there are Sunday mornings where I'd rather be in bed at times. Anyone feel like that? Why are you here? No. I'll give you one. I'm going to have this emotional disagreement now. No, no. This is for you to reflect on. I know in past I've asked for you to respond, but I really want you to wrestle with that question. What is bringing you here? Why would you take time out? Because I've known many a friend, many good friends. We've planted churches together. We've done a lot of things that I look back on and think, man, I could really sense the Holy Spirit and what he did in those moments with us. What it was that shook us. And then today they're not in church. Today they don't want to bar. They're like, oh, I just can't take the church anymore. Why? Oh, because of this. Oh, because of that. Oh, I just don't. And I keep seeing and hearing it, and I'm struggling with it. Because on Friday evening, I felt it. I don't want to be a church. Why am I doing it? Go get another job and make more money, maybe. I'll be able to sleep over the weekends. That's a pipe dream. We know that. It's interesting because this morning I was going to preach a completely different sermon, and I changed it yesterday. And I thought, oh, Rob, you're going off track. But I feel this is really important. This morning I was going to talk about our first series, part of the series called Engagement. We've come out of, you know, vision. We're into engagement and what community means. And I had this verse that I worked on a while ago, and it came back. It's Luke 14, verses 25 to 27. It said, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. You know, in Christian circles, there's always this tussle. You even read it in the New Testament between Paul and the book of James, this tussle between works and grace and all of this stuff. But here Jesus cuts across all of that, and he makes this statement that is deeply challenging. Deeply challenging. He's not mincing words here. He's not trying to make it sound easier. In fact, he's making it sound exactly what it sounds like, hard. First of all, there's a large crowd that seems to follow him. And counter to a lot of these church movements that we are also a part of, he's not interested in maintaining the large crowd. Because words like this alienate people. Words like this split people, challenge people. And large crowds don't usually like that. He's hitting a point. The work he's going to do, this work called salvation, will cost us absolutely nothing. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to earn it. We don't have to do anything. He's doing all the work. It's costing him everything. That moment on the cross where you hear the anguish of Jesus when he yells out, Father, why have you forsaken me? This is God being split from God. In a moment in which the Almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-seeing, everywhere God in that moment in Jesus is gone. He paid the price. And for him, it was everything. It cost us nothing. Salvation costs nothing. But let me tell you what costs. Discipleship costs everything. Following Jesus costs everything. We will all have our Friday evening moments where we just want to yell to God and want to give up on everything. And then try to convince our wives to become Buddhists. Because that's easier. I want to meditate all day. Right? And then my wife's going, are you serious? Of course I'm not serious. But following Jesus costs us everything. And some of you might have heard preachers tell you, because he's worth it. But there are times in which you don't feel that. There are times in which you feel, really? And you know those motivating sermons that get you gung-ho and you walk away and the next day you're kind of grasping at straws and thinking, I'm not feeling it. I just want to tell you that's okay. That's completely okay. Because there are times in which I don't feel it. Following Jesus will cost us everything. And if it's not costing you, if you're not struggling and wrenching with this faith thing, this journey of whether you go left or right or straight or back or what did he say, what did she say, I want to do this, what does God want me to do with that, and I don't know if I believe anymore. These are part of the journey. Last week I had a person come to me and it was powerful when they sat down with me and said, I don't know if I believe anymore. Does that make me bad? And I said, that makes you so good you won't even believe it. Because you know the cost. And you're wrestling with it. Hallelujah. Martin Lloyd-Jones says, we are living in an age hopelessly below the New Testament pattern, content with a neat little religion. J.B. Phillips goes on to say, he says, the great difference between present-day Christianity and that of which we read in the New Testament is that to us it's primarily a performance. To them, it was a real experience. We're apt to reduce the Christian religion to a code or at best a rule of heart and life. To the early church, it quite plainly was the invasion of their lives by new quality of life together. And it wasn't all roses. It was a struggle. Because not only does following Jesus cost us everything, but there's also a cost of being in community. There is a cost for us to say, we will do this together. This faith thing, this God thing, this church thing. There is a cost. And you know I don't pull punches. But when we tell our kids that we sacrifice for all these activities we do, you're telling them that it's okay, that church is not important, that these things are more. My grandmother made sure every Sunday we were at her place for lunch. And she threatened me once, kicking me out of the family, good Italian grandmother, with all the love that she had, because I wanted to go watch a football game. She says, after lunch, you can watch it on TV. But if you don't come back again. Oh my gosh, really? It's just a football game. No, give me a break. Oh, you didn't know if she was serious or not, and you, okay, I'm going to come and have lunch, because... Yeah. I'm not trying to put fear into you in this. What I am saying is this is actually more important than anything you will do this week. The moment you stop everything you're doing and you come together and you give that time to God, there's nothing more important. And let me tell you, it costs having to get up in the morning, put a pretty face on and come in here and act that we're all happy and good. It costs. When I see people that we may not like each other very much, or I don't like the music, or really that pastor's not really that great. Because community costs. It requires effort. It requires sacrifice. It requires everything. I don't know what happens in life that at a young age, you really want to be part of everything. And as we get older, we retreat away from everything. You know, the thought of going to Easter camp for me is like, there's nothing worse. I've done it for years, believe me. And it's like, oh, I've got to sleep on the floor. And then there's people everywhere. They're going to keep me up all night. Oh, no. And toilets. I just want my own toilet, right? And my own shower. And we retreat as we get older, right? What we lose, I was at an association meeting this week on top of everything else. And it was really interesting because we're interviewing for this new regional leader, and we had a guy there that we're talking to, and one of the people who was in the part of the interviewing team, you know, she made the comment, I want to know why the youth pastors are so connected and the senior pastors are not. And the guy came up with a brilliant response. They're intentional. We older senior pastors make excuses. And as being the one of the few senior pastors at that table, okay. Like, you don't know the week I'm having, let me tell you. Excuses. We've got to be intentional about this. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that. I'm telling you, I find it difficult at times. I told you what my daughter told me last week. Did I? That was the evening service. Thank you, Sam. I'm glad I've got. See, young people, they got it. They're listening. At our Sunday evening service, I shared a bit about it. But she made a comment to me. I've been struggling trying to get her to church, and you know, and she struggles with it, and she has her reasonings around it, and I understand them. But she made a comment: if you weren't working, Dad, would you go? And I made the mistake of pausing. I didn't mean to. I just wanted to think through the question a bit. How would I feel if I wasn't working? Would I come to church on a Sunday? And, you know, honestly, the first thing that came to mind was all the things I could do. But she obviously took it. She goes, see? And I didn't want to argue it. But I wanted her to know that I wrestle with it too. In the end, I told her, I said, for me, it's an obligation, not to you all, though that is part of what I do, but to him. Because he's called us to be in community. Acts chapter 2. Oh, sorry. So that's what happens when you don't have notes and you get to a point, you're like, oh, yeah, I was going to talk about that. Yeah, when I first shared, when we started this whole series, I told you what the vision is for God's church, right? And it was these two things. Church is about helping people reconcile with God, and church is about helping people reconcile with each other. It's the encapsulation of the greatest commandment. It's the encapsulation of the great commissioning. It's all there in those two phrases, right? The problem we have at church right now is that we don't want to be with each other sometimes. Actually, for some of us, a lot of the times. So how do we help people reconcile with God when we can't reconcile with each other? Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to coming together, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to one another, anyone who had need. And every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And just look at all those words in blue. They, fellowship, everyone, all together, they, every, they, there, together, together, there, all. I mean, look at those words, all in that just one paragraph of a few verses. It screams intentionality. What's interesting in all of that is that one word, fellowship. The Greek word for it is koinonia. Anyone heard that word before? Do you know, koinonia can be translated in many different words. One of them is fellowship, but there's another word it can be translated into. Intercourse. Those of you who laughed, yes. Of course, sexual connotations. Actually, it's not a bad connotation. Koinonia means that very thing, intimately coming together. Intercourse, we think of it as physical. But here I'm thinking of it spiritually. Fellowship is not just, hey, high five, good to see you. There's an intimate bond in coming together. That same word doesn't just mean fellowship, it means intercourse. That's how intimate that bonding is. We have something that ties us together. We have something that gives us meaning, purpose, vision, hope. His name's Jesus Christ. And he gave his life, everything. And now he calls us to give everything, to follow him and to be in community. It's not the sermon I had planned to preach this morning. But God has his plans. And the challenge for us this week is, what does that mean for you? Why do you come here? When you read something like, you got to hate your parents, really, my wife, my kids, what does that mean to you? Is this important to you? I ask the worship team, the music team, to come up. I don't know, I could keep challenging you, but I think maybe you can get over-challenged. But I do want to give you a moment, as these guys are up here, to just reflect on some of the things that were shared. Where are you at with this? That sounds ominous, rather than... Ooh. Take a moment, though. How important is community to you? How important is church to you? Following Jesus. Are you prepared to give everything?